All right, it is one of my favorite days of the NBA year, actually the day after one of my favorite days. But I love it when the over-unders come out. We're totally ripping off of Bill Simmons and Joe House here because they kind of started this, and it's a great podcast to look at the over-unders and give an idea of whether we think it should be over-under, what some of the our best bets might be. I am not actually a real betting man, but I think it's fun just in terms of setting preseason expectations, kind of getting an idea of what the zeitgeist is for this team's future. And joining me, as often, Danny LaRue. What's up?
I'm excited about this, too. And like you, I'm a non-gambler, though I feel like with some of these that it would be worth it to put something behind it.
Yeah, well, maybe that's all. I guess we'll find out. So here's what our format's going to be. Today we're going to do the East. We'll go in alphabetical order, say whether we want the over or under, also maybe talk about some of the title odds, and then we will give a best bet for title odds at the end of the East, and also a best long shot, you know, higher than 10 to 1 for title odds in the East. And then tomorrow we'll come back with the West, do the same thing with the West, and then Danny and I are going to give our five best bets each, and then also we're just going to take 100 mythical dollars, allocate them to whatever bets on the board we want, and then we'll keep track of it throughout the year and see who ends up winning and make fun of each other mercilessly throughout the year. That sounded good to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully it works out as well for me as the playoff predictions did.
All right, let's start with the team that I actually have struggled with a lot because there are so many kind of competing factors here in projecting them. Atlanta Hawks, 49.5. And this, we're going off of the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook odds that were posted on ESPN yesterday, 9:29. So 49.5. What do you think of that?
I'm surprised you're struggling with it. For me, while it is certainly possible they go over, I'm pretty comfortable thinking that they'll go under.
Interesting. What's your rationale?
I don't think they're as good as they were last year. And 60 was high. I think we, even if they had brought Carroll back, we wouldn't have expected that. And my issue with them is that they didn't plug their holes. They actually kind of created worse ones. And so the sheer random chance pushes down. Remember that only three teams in the East would have won enough games last year to win this bet. And while that is not necessarily representative, I think that even if they're in, let's say, the 2.5-point differential, something in that range, I don't think they get to 50.
60-22 a year ago, but as we've discussed on previous programs, only a 5.4 differential, which is more indicative, actually one of the worst 60-win teams of all time by that measure, more indicative of a 55-56-win team. Then you throw in the fact that people are going to be older. You throw in the fact they're going to be less healthy. They lost Amari Carroll, don't really have a two-way option on the wing. Cephalosha and Korver both coming off injuries. A coach who doesn't like to play guys a ton of minutes. Maybe Al Horford's impending free agency could also throw a wrench in. And so I think if this were 50, I'd probably be on the under. I think 49.5 is just about right there for me. Gun to my head, I will go under, but this is not one I would be all over at all. But I think just with the health issues, the regression, the fact that the guys are older, and just the lack of really any proven option on the wing, that's what makes me feel like, and just also their recent history. If you just look at what they've done over the last few years, that 60 wins is such an outlier. So yeah, I think I would go under reluctantly. Do you feel more strongly about your under?
I do. I also, we should mention that their title odds are 25-1. I think that is way too strong. It's hard for me to envision a way that this team wins a championship this year.
Hmm. Yeah, they are higher than some other teams that you might not think that about, and we'll get to those. Yeah,
you can't really short title odds. So, I mean, realistically, it's more of I wouldn't bet it than hey, this is an opportunity.
All right. Well, before we get on to the next team in order, the Boston Celtics, I want to tell you about SeatGeek, the inaugural sponsor of the Dunked On Basketball podcast, for which we are very thankful. They take a very analytical approach to selling you tickets, just as we do here on the podcast. So it's a great fit as a sponsor. We're proud to have them. And the way that they work is they pretty much aggregate all ticket sites. So you used to have to worry, you'd go to 10 different sites and, oh, I better go to this one, there might be a better deal. Now you don't have to do that anymore. They do that for you. You download the app, takes less than a minute. It's all right there in front of you. They have a metric called deal score to tell you whether this is a good deal or a bad deal, the particular tickets that you're looking at. NBA season is starting. Preseason starts really within the week. Season starts on October 27th, or you can get football tickets, concert tickets, baseball, even, you know, playoff games, whatever your fancy. SeatGeek has it, and you can be, it's such peace of mind to know that you're getting the best deal. What's more, you can use my code CAPSPACE, all one word, fits in with the podcast. That's how you can remember it. And you get $20 off your first purchase. Even if you're not planning on buying tickets right now, go ahead and sign up, supports the podcast, helps keep them as a sponsor, keep the podcast going, which we appreciate. And you can get great deals on tickets. So that's the cap space code for $20 off on SeatGeek. Boston Celtics, 42.5, your thoughts?
I think they're going to go over this because it's strange. I've spent a lot of the season not thinking they were as good as they were, especially in the second half of the year. But at a certain point, you have to take what they did after the Isaiah Thomas trade and think, well, maybe that's a way to calibrate this. And their margin was over 2 points a game in that stretch, like their scoring margin Isaiah Thomas trade.
24 and 12 during that period, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so if that's even close to real, and they got better. They got Amir Johnson, who not only is better than Brandon Bass, but fixes one of their bigger flaws, and they're a young team, so getting older helps them.
Yeah, that's right. Now, they do have too many guys, you could say. I think if they're going to play David Lee a lot, which I think there's going to be pressure to do, that could maybe provide some downward mobility. We don't know what they're going to get from Jared Sullinger. He and Zeller are both up for extensions. But they brought back Jarebko as well. And you're right. Pretty much everyone on this roster other than Lee is young enough that we would expect them to at the very least stay the same and potentially get better next year. Marcus Smart in particular is someone I think is going to make a big leap from last year. And Kelly Olynyk also is another guy, and Amir Johnson protects the rim for them. So saying all that, 42.5 though, and that's 4.5 wins more than they had last year. I, like you, really underestimated them last year, and I thought they were kind of a speed bump in the playoffs, but I like them as a regular season team because they have so many just slightly above average guys, and when you have 10 of those guys in the regular season, you can do pretty well. So I think 42.5, I feel a very strong over on them. They would be one of my stronger ones in the Eastern Conference as well.
Yeah, and also, we talked about depth. You mentioned it's a regular season thing. This is a team that can withstand injuries better than most teams, and I think that matters because they have a good coach. They have depth at every position they have quality at. So it's hard for me to envision a way where they really fall off a cliff in a way that, like, Miami could do or some of the other teams.
Yeah, and a lot of these over-unders are kind of weird, right? Because you think, hey, if they stay healthy, they'll be way better than that, right? But if they don't stay healthy, then it's like, oh, all of a sudden they're just not going to be better than that. And it's so hard to predict whether there are going to be injuries or not. You know, you could think of the Cavaliers or something, right? Like if everyone's healthy on that team, that's probably a 60-win team. But now they've had all these injuries and you say, well, you know, maybe they're a 50-win team with a bunch of injuries, but they're right in the middle of that for their over-under. So it's kind of hard to anticipate, you know, how bad injuries are going to hurt teams. But with the Celtics, you feel a little bit better about believing that they're going to get closer to what their full potential is. And that's one of the reasons that I like them. That's a great point about the injuries for them. They are 100-1 to win the title. That is not good. Don't bet that.
And you made that nice talk about injuries, and I thought you were using that as a segue into the Brooklyn Nets, who have one of the larger variabilities in terms of injury because they're such a top-heavy team, in my opinion.
28.5 over-under, and they were 38-44, snuck into the playoffs a year ago, although they did play better down the stretch, Part of that was just getting lucky in close games. Unlike the Celtics, who had a 0.2 point differential while going 40-42 last year. I guess I was wrong. I think I might have said 38-44. They were 40-42 last year. The Nets were at negative 2.9. And then you consider Brook Lopez, never a paragon of health. Thaddeus Young, pretty good, but they don't really have any established backups at the big positions behind those two guys. You know, it's all kind of minimum flyer types because that's all they had to stay under the luxury tax this year after they dumped Deron Williams. And Jarrett Jack at point guard was one of the worst players in the league by plus minus, shouldn't really be playing at all. And now he's the starter and they don't have anyone who's proven backing him up either. So you could see maybe that this team with the starters, Joe Johnson, Bogdanovich, yeah, they might be okay, but the bench is totally unproven. And, you know, 28 wins seems about right to them for them. For me, what are you going with for them, over or under?
I wouldn't bet it, first of all, but I think a little bit over on the logic that Sacramento last year had what in many ways could be a season from hell, considering their coaching staff, except that they have DeMarcus Cousins, but he missed plenty of time with various things, including viral meningitis. They won 29 games last year. And I think that Brooklyn has its flaws, but what gives me pause the other way is not only the talent issues, but that I just have trouble seeing them getting wins against a lot of teams. This isn't a team that's going to get gimmies. Like they'll
that's the problem, by the way, if they can't get wins against a lot of teams.
Well, no, but like there aren't the Eastern Conference now doesn't have, other than the Sixers, really those teams where it's like, okay, as long as we show up, we're going to win. Orlando, the Knicks, the Pistons, all those teams are feistier. So I could see any of them.
You know,
them
we say being, that, but then there's always teams that have injuries.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I never would have thought the Knicks would be a complete doormat last year.
True.
For example.
Yeah, and the other another thing to consider with them, and we'll talk about this with a few teams, particularly in the East, is that since they don't have their pick, they have no incentive to bottom out. So I think not that they can do much because they're trapped by a couple different things, but there is no real reason for them to take their foot off the gas pedal, especially because they don't have a lot of young guys that they're going to throw into the fire to say, hey, well, at least we can do a youth movement. Other than Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and, you know, if they want to count Larkin, they don't really have a ton of those guys that they really need to figure out.
Not only is the fact that the draft pick is with the Celtics kind of tugging them upward toward the end of the year, even if they're out of contention, but also you've got Lionel Hollins, who could easily be let go at the end of this year if they don't fulfill expectations. Billy King perpetually on the hot seat as well. And, you know, so they're going to try to make this look as good as they can optically. And then they're going to be in the free agent market next summer as well. So even if they miss the playoffs, they'd rather it be by a couple of games than just shut everyone down and just kind of let it tank and try to get a better draft pick, as you said. So a lot of competing things. I think it is very possible if a couple things go wrong that this could be one of the absolute worst teams in the league. And I think even that that's a little bit more likely than them exceeding expectations and competing for the playoffs. But I think 28, 29, 30 is kind of right about right for them. I am going to ultimately go over just by a slight bit, just because I think they're still going to be trying towards the end of the year.
I'm going to go over two, but for almost exactly the same reasons, I'm reticent. But I think that, you know, Joe Johnson, Brook Lopez, Thaddeus Young, those guys can carry them to do it enough. And, yeah, I think that they can also theoretically help their point guard situation. It's almost impossible to make it worse. So you can do that. And never, ever, ever bet their title odds. I can't even imagine why they're anything other than, like, infinite.
Well, yeah, I think once those 99 Rams came from like infinite to win the Super Bowl, it seemed like basically there's no point in giving someone that. And really, I think in a lot of bettors' minds, like 500-1 and like 5,000-1 is basically kind of no difference.
That's true.
Like, if you're going to bet it at 500-1, you're going to bet it at 5,000-1. I think for a lot of people, especially the kind of casual bettors who are going to make those sort of bets. So, all right, so you are over, I am over as well for the Nets. Let me mark that down. And let's move on now. Who is next?
Charlotte. So Charlotte, in one of the more interesting lines for me, Charlotte won 33 games last year, and their line is 32.5.
Yeah, this is maybe my strongest over on the board of any of them, and just strongest, not only strongest over, but just strongest bet. They were 33 games a year ago, and remember that they did that basically because everyone got hurt at the end of the year. They lost basically the entire first month of the season trying to play Lance Stephenson, who had one of the worst shooting seasons in NBA history and was just a complete suck for them. So you consider that they basically gave it up and got the best draft pick they could once it became clear they couldn't make the playoffs in the last 2 weeks of the season. And Al Jefferson wasn't really healthy. Kemba Walker missed a bunch of time with a knee scope. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist missed time. Most of their guys other than Jefferson should be better this year. And they got Nick Batum now for a guy who didn't play at all. And he at least can provide competent two-way play on the wing, which is something that they didn't have at all. Someone who could shoot and defend a little bit. I see absolutely no reason to believe this team will be worse than next year. Can you think of any?
No, I refer to last year. There's a group of teams that I think had what I call Indian burial ground seasons, which, like, just they're cursed in every way. And so for me, that works as a realistic floor for a team like that. And so to be able to have the over-under set below that floor makes this pretty comfortable for me. And as you said, they missed a lot of games due to injury. Kidd-Gilchrist missed almost 30, which is a ton. Even guys like Cody Zeller missed 20 games. Jefferson missed almost 20. And so it's realistic not only that they will get more contributions from their guys, they also got better talent-wise, and for the most part, them getting older help. So I don't see any reason to bet the under, and they're deeper now. So yeah, an injury to Kemba or Al would hurt them a lot, but I think they're a little bit more durable than that number puts it at. It's not like they're Brooklyn in that sense.
Yeah, I agree with you, and they at least have some options at power forward now. Zeller was actually someone who was pretty good by plus-minus metrics and maybe a little overrated because Marvin Williams was so bad as his backup. But, yeah, I think that – let me ask you this real quick. This isn't an official prediction, but right now if I had to ask you, how many games do you think this team wins?
37?
Something. I think they would win like 39, 40.
Even. I think they have that talent, but I just downgraded a couple steps because I assume people are going to get hurt.
Yeah, that's true. And Steve Clifford, whenever he's had Michael Kidd-Gilchrist available, and who I think Kidd-Gilchrist also missed some time at the very end of last year as well, as I recall, they've had a really good defense. This has been a top five defense, and if you know, at the very worst, top 10. And if you're that good defensively, there's really no way that you can be that bad of a team. You know, I mean, if this is a top 7 or 8 defense, as I fully expect them to be, that almost gets you to the 32 wins right there, you know, even if you're one of the worst offenses, which I think they could be a little bit improved this year with better shooting and just skill development from their young guys. So we are in unanimous agreement so far. Who's next? Let's see if we can get some divisions here. This is getting boring.
Yeah, another team, one close to your heart, that the number is set basically where they were last year. The Chicago Bulls, they won 50 last year. The over-under is set at 49.5.
Whew, this is tough. Do you have one? I might even need to think about this one a little bit more yet.
What I think about with the Bulls is health. So Noah was obviously hurt last year. We don't know if he's back, if that was an aberration or not.
He's talking about like he is, and he couldn't move last year, and now he can. Yeah.
And Rose only played in 51 games last year. So this is not a circumstance where he's saying, hey, this is what they did without Rose. I think that despite the Dunleavy injury, which is a factor in this, a slight factor, but a factor nonetheless, I think they're going to go over because they will use their talent better and they will stay healthier. Their aggregate talent level will be up. They'll use Mirotić more. They'll use him better, almost as importantly. And even if they get the same from Derrick Rose, I think that's enough to push him over 50.
These are the types of ones that I always struggle with, right? Charlotte, to me, is easy. They have pretty much the same guys coming back. Most of them are younger, so they'll probably get a little better. They won 33 last year. They added Batum, same coaching staff. all right, pretty much every factor would indicate that they're going to be better than last year. Now we have a new coaching staff. We don't know. We don't really have a great idea of whether Hoiberg is going to make them better or worse this year. You know, he could, presumably they'll be better offensively, but you know, maybe his defensive discipline, they won't be as good as they were last year defensively, but then maybe Noah could be better defensively than he was last year. And maybe not playing Gasol and Noah together will really help. And maybe Mirotić will play more, but now Dunleavy is injured. There's all these things that are working at cross purposes, and it's really difficult to determine kind of what the effect is going to be. I am going to tentatively go under on this team just because I think the Dunleavy injury is really going to hurt, and I am not ready to believe yet in Doug McDermott and Tony Snell, and those guys are going to get a ton of minutes. And I also am not willing to believe yet that Noah is back, and they just always seem to have some injuries. You know, I can't say that I believe that much in this training staff, although a lot of these injuries are not necessarily acute things. Rose, the hope for him being a little bit better this year is kind of shut down to some extent because he's going to miss all of training camp. And I think actually under Hoiberg, he's the one who's going to need to learn to play differently the most. He's going to need to actually learn how to play in transition again and push the ball and play fast. He's the one who's going to be driving that. And he actually, for all his speed on one man fast breaks every once in a while, just usually walks it up. So with all those, I'm going to go under, but I don't have a strong feeling either way. You went with the over, right?
Right. You don't think they're going to use Aaron Brooks as the linchpin of their offense?
Yeah, that's the other thing too, right? If Rose misses time or they don't play him that much, Brooks really regressed towards the end of last year and in the playoffs was way over his head just in shooting luck. Kirk Heinrich is done. So I really worry about their backup point guard position as well. So, and just the overall depth, I'm sure they're going to play Jimmy Butler less minutes this year as well. So now you're relying on Tony Snell, Doug McDermott, Aaron Brooks, and Kirk Heinrich to play big minutes. And, you know, now they might play Mirotić the three, which never really works. So all those things, I'm finally going to go under a little bit. But it would not shock me if they went over. And it wouldn't even shock me if they were in, like, the 55 win range.
And another calibration point here, because it was easy when you had all Thibodeau teams to say, oh, you know, they're just going to push to the finish line. They don't have that anymore. So that changes things as well, is that that dynamic is completely different than it was. And while I think they're going to have all the incentive in the world because the Eastern Conference is, I think it's going to be kind of a morass. You know, there are going to be a bunch of teams around the same number, so they'll want to push for that reason. I don't think that they're going to throw Jimmy Butler to the Wolves for, you know, 40 minutes a night at the end of it to ensure that, even if it's just as a reactionary thing because of what happened the last couple of years.
And I think they would be wise to just make sure that they're ready to go in the playoffs. I think this is a team that still has more talent on it probably than any other team in the East if they're all ready to go, other than, of course, Cleveland. So maybe you could say Washington, depending on what happens with Wall and Beal this year, could have more talent than them, but I don't think so. I think they're still the second most talented team in the East, and it's better to just have all that talent ready to go. This is not a team that has particularly benefited from home court advantage in playoffs past either, so it's not like getting home court is some huge thing for them. And yeah, I think that is another potential reason why they might chill out a little bit. And, you know, Hoiberg, I think, is going to push back a little bit against the Thibodeau legacy, and, you know, taking his foot off the gas is a little bit of a way to do that. Cleveland.
Wait, can I say one more thing on that?
Sorry.
I think that the most important thing for them is to not get the 4 or 5. I think that that is the way that could push them one direction or the other. You know, I don't think anybody else scares them. You know, assuming Cleveland gets the 1. I don't think anybody else scares them. So if I were Hoiberg or whoever, honestly, in any team in this, I would just try to make sure that you're not in the 4-5 series.
Yeah, I think that's right. That gets you to the East Finals a little bit more. But that's assuming, of course, that Cleveland does get the 1 seed. And with some recent injury news, maybe they will not. 56.5 for them. What's your thought, over under? Oh, and I'm sorry. Let's talk about the Bulls' title odds, too. We didn't do Charlotte. That's 300-1. Don't bother with that. Bulls title odds, 12-1. Maybe we'll get back to that when we do try to pick one team to do title odds for in the East. Cleveland's, 2-1 title odds, 56.5 over under.
56.5 is a lot of wins. I think people can lose sight of that. This is an extremely talented team, but I don't think they're going to have to push that hard. And I also think that with Kyrie's injury, they're not likely to be in the place where they can push for the best record or even close to that compared to the West teams. So I think that their talent level is higher than a 56 win by a little bit, you know, by a respectable amount. I mean, because considering the Hawks...
I think when everyone's healthy, this is a 60-win team.
Yeah, but
like a 62-win.
But when everyone's healthy, we already know is not going to happen. That's right. Just out the window. So I'm leaning under, but I'm somewhat positive about their title odds, and that's going to open a whole nother kettle of fish.
I feel pretty good about the under on this one, especially with Shumpert. He's someone that
they really need
to provide some two-way play. Mozgov, don't forget that he's coming off of knee surgery as well, and we haven't heard that he's going like absolute full bore yet. We don't know what that surgery was. Varejao, who they're counting on, I mean, you know, who knows what he's going to be able to give them. Sasha Khan actually could end up getting a few minutes with this team, and I think he can provide some semi-competent facsimile of what Mozgov gives them, although he's a lot less skilled than Mozgov. But nonetheless, this team, I think they're just not going to be healthy. LeBron, they're not going to push hard with him. They got plenty of confidence that if some of these lower rung East teams emerges, which is not impossible, by the way. I mean, nobody saw the Hawks coming last year. You've got kind of five or six teams in this 45 to 50 win projected range. One of them could hit on all cylinders and win in the high 50s. That's not out of the question. So, but I don't think they really care about whether they have home court. LeBron's teams have always, not always, but often come from the 2 seed or lower to get into the finals. So I don't think they're going to push that hard. I feel pretty comfortable about the under for them.
There's no incentive for them. They're a team that should have all the confidence in the world that they can make it to the finals, and I don't think they're going to be close enough to care about that. So yeah, I think that the incentive is there, but you can at the same time make the argument, you think about that the Hawks won 60 last year, even with limited Kyrie, even with Shumpert, I think that I would take this Cavs team over the Hawks team last year. So I can see the argument for over. I just don't see if you're running a theoretical 1,000 simulations or 1,000 times with this season, I think they go under more than they go over just because there's no reason for them to go over.
Detroit, 33.5, 201 title odds. Don't even need to bother with that. But 33.5. What do you think? This is a team that burned me last year when I think they were either 36 or 36.5. I thought they would go over. That did not, in fact, occur, although they had a stretch where if they could have been able to keep up anything like that, they might have gotten there. They had that dreadful 5-23 start and were better after that. But this is a much different team from last year, which has kind of been an incremental occurrence, and maybe people don't realize it quite as much. But I don't know. I kind of like the over a little bit here. What do you think?
I generally like the over, but I don't love... It's not like Charlotte for me, because I can see ways that this team is worse. They definitely changed. I like Ersan Ilyasova. I'm okay with Marcus Morris. But Greg Monroe was a very good basketball player, even if he was a terrible fit for what they did and all of that. He's still very good. And I like Stanley Johnson, but I don't know that a young rookie is going to be the cure that ails them. I never rely on that. So I think that this is a really good number. And if I had to guess which way they'll go, I would say over. But I'm not enthusiastic about it.
Andre Drummond played 30.5 minutes a game last year. And basically, for whenever he wasn't out there at center, they had Greg Monroe out there. So now that's 18 minutes a game, you're downgrading from Monroe to Aaron Baines. I do think that their personnel fits a lot better. You're going from Ersan Ilyasova is an upgrade off of someone like Anthony Tolliver, who can play with Stan Van Gundy's kind of stress system. Reggie Jackson probably gives you more at point guard than they got in the aggregate over the course of last year. not much there backing him up until Brandon Jennings comes back. And then on the wing, I expect KCP to take a solid leap this year. He quietly actually was in the top 15 in the league in three-pointers attempted and shot a decent percentage. So I expect him to get just a little bit better there, start to get better defensively. That's ultimately where I think, you know, can some of these young guys make a leap defensively? Can they get anything out of Stanley Johnson? Those are going to be the big questions for me. I mean, if they're, everyone would love it if they can be starting Johnson by the end of the year instead of Marcus Morris at the three. And that if he can fulfill his potential at all defensively, he could be an upgrade over Morris there. So I don't know. I'm going to go a very tentative over as a vote for Stan Van Gundy, but I don't feel fantastic about it.
Yeah, I think we're on the same boat. You want to move on?
Yes.
The Indiana Pacers. The Indiana Pacers, who won 38 games with a roster that looks very different than what they have now, and their over-under is set at 42.5.
Yeah, another one of these teams that so much is different from last year, I find them very hard to project. You've got a bunch of factors going in different directions. Paul George is back, but you don't know how good he's going to be. Is he going to be 2014 Paul George or not? Frank Vogel, I think, is a good coach, but how much of that was him having two solid defensive bigs in there nearly at all times? I mean, now it's basically Jan Mahimi and nobody else who's has much of a history of defending at the big positions. This whole George at the four thing, which I think I've said before, is totally overrated. He's going to be guarding the small forward or the biggest wing threat.
And the other team's wing is going to be guarding him, too.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's no big other threat that he's going to be playing with on the wing, where if you're going to stay big, you put your power forward on, you know, a Solomon Hill type instead of putting it on George, or you even put it on CJ Miles instead of George. But in any event, yeah, I mean, they've got Ellis now. Stuckey is back. George Hill didn't play very much, but was awesome when he did play last year. They were so racked by injuries. Still managed to have a good defense. How much of that was Hibbert, who is gone? I was actually shocked that their over-under was this high.
Yep.
Were you surprised by that? I was thinking this is a team that could do a little bit better and has some pretty good upside. But then looking at it, I was just surprised. I was thinking that my guess was going to be that their line was going to be set at like 36, 37. And then I would have felt pretty good about an over. But I guess the thinking is they won 38 games last year. George is back now, and nobody's giving any credence to the fact that Hibbert is gone, and maybe their defense can be a lot worse.
What you just said was the encapsulation that I was going to say. I was thinking, oh, it'll be a low over under, and I'll happily do it. This is way too high. Like I think that there is certainly a possibility that they win this many games. I think that Paul George is a great player, but their offense was distinctly not good last year, and their defense was very good, but all the players who made that good other than Paul George and George Hill are gone. So I could see them, you know, there is a possibility that they go
Stuckey,
over.
Stuckey's still there, I guess, but he's not really much of a defender yet.
No. Yeah, so like their depth is an issue now. We talked about it with a couple of teams. Like if they lose Paul George or George Hill, they don't have functional replacements for either one of them. And their front court depth is bad anyway. So I don't see it as very likely that they get into that range this year just on how they chose to build the team.
Yeah. George missed basically the entire year last year. Hill missed about half the season, although he played so well and he was back. You wouldn't expect that to linger on into this year. But I am going to tentatively go under. I think they could easily beat this. I think they could surprise and be like the sixth or the fifth seed, even if everything goes according to plan and George is back. But I just can't believe that he is really, really back until we see it from him after that horrific injury. I mean, it's a bone injury, not a ligament injury. So, you know, those hopefully shouldn't be as debilitating. But I want to believe he's the same guy, and I want to see this team stay healthy. And they still have too many question marks in the front court and this whole playing small thing. I mean, they don't have like amazing wings that are going to play small with either. So yeah, I'm going to go under, but I don't feel great about it because I believe in Vogel to put together a decent defense. And I think that George could be really good. I just don't know that he's going to be.
Yeah. I'm more comfortable in the under than you are, but you know, the logic applies. It's just that I think that their talent level, we'll talk about this with Portland, is kind of a similar thing with me. It's, you know, like I don't think that their star is good enough to push them to the level that the expectations are at.
All right, who's next?
Next is the Miami Heat. Miami 137 last year. Over-under is set at a whopping 45.5.
Does that surprise you that it was that low?
Not really. I mean, because while their talent level is obviously better than that, and they are, to a point, a glamour team, we saw the wheels fall off last year in terms of record. I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing they're a team that smoked people on over-under last year. And so I can see them.
Yeah, I think they were like 44.5 or something last year in the over-under.
Yeah, so I think that their talent level is pretty, to me, pretty undeniably better than that. And what makes it different than last year is that I think that their depth is better in a way that actually matters. I think that while they don't have, you know, the perfect solution in their backcourt, considering Dwayne Wade is going to miss time, I think that they're good enough that if things stay reasonable, they should be around that level.
They have someone now who can at least be, is probably going to be a competent NBA backup at just about every position. You got Chalmers at the one, you know, not a starting quality point guard probably, but decent player. And then even Tyler Johnson showed some flashes last year behind Dragic. Jael Green at the two, not a guy you want playing huge minutes, but as a backup, too, he's probably in the upper half of the league. Justice Winslow at the three was the number 10 pick. We don't know how ready he's going to be, but he at least can compete physically. Josh McRoberts at the four is a very nice backup power forward. And then you've got Stoudemire and even Chris Anderson as well. You know, those two guys, probably one of them will always be hurt, but you've got the other one available when during that time. So, yeah, I think I worry about their health, certainly, but now that they actually have some more competent backups than last year when they were totally gutted, I think I ultimately will go over the 45.5. I was torn until just kind of looking at the roster and be like, hey, they have some really good depth this year and can withstand injuries a little bit better. Those are the kind of teams that I like where even if there are health question marks, you can project that someone might be able to come in and keep them afloat.
And their top-end talent is quite good. I think if they can keep two of their main four guys, Whiteside, Bosch, Wade, and Dragic, not in that order, obviously, if they can keep two of those four healthy at any given time, I think that they can do that. And two out of four is not asking a lot. You know, if it was three or four, then that would be a little bit different. But Dragic and Bosch are good enough to win this team games and to win them a lot of games. And so I think that they're probably the team that you could do the least selling. Like if you told me they won 40, I'd be like, okay, you know, at the end of the year, I'd be like, yeah, that I can see that happening. But it's not. I think that they're going to win more than this, and it's possible that they'll be not comfortably over it, but you know, enough that you're not sweating at the last week or two of the year.
40-1 championship odds. That actually, I never really seem to like these long shot odds that much, but that might be one that I would consider as kind of my East long shot because this is a team with a lot of talent on it. And I do worry about the fit with Wade and Deng not providing that much shooting at the two and three positions. And Whiteside could implode. We don't know if he's going to be as good as he was last year. But, yeah, this team has a ton of talent. I think people have kind of forgotten how good Chris Bosh is because as soon as Dragic got there, he ended up having that blood clot issue. But he is averaging over 20 a game last year and pretty efficient and shooting the ball well. So, yeah, I think that that this team is a pretty decent bet for the over. I would predict that they're going to win 49-50 games.
Yeah, well, you were talking about the title odds, and to me the two teams that at close to full strength present the greatest challenge to Cleveland to win the conference are Miami and Chicago, and for their title odds to be that different kind of tells me that one of them or both of them is off. And I'm not saying Miami has a great chance to win the title, but 40-1, I can see it. I think it's a very distant chance, but you know, if you feel it a little more than I do, I could certainly be fine with somebody running with that.
Yeah. If you think about it, this is a team that has an above average starter, I think at every position, maybe you could say Deng is about average. And then they probably have an above average backup at every position as well. Or at least average. So when you look at it that way, And there's a lot of talent on this team. Yeah, there are fit issues. This might actually, you know, I said the Bulls are the most talented team. You know, it might actually be Miami. So that's, granted, there are age questions, injury issues, et cetera. But, yeah, I think when healthy, if everything goes right for this team, this could even be a 55-win team.
Yeah.
If everything goes right. We don't know how it's all going to fit together. It hasn't worked that well. But if you just look at the names on this team, some pretty good names and guys who still have something left.
And something left is important. These aren't names like, I don't want to throw them under the bus, but like Vince Carter, where it's like, where you still have that recognition. These are guys who are contributing players right now. This isn't an issue like that. Maybe Amari is a little bit at that point, but they're not going to be asking him to do much. It's not like they're starting him at center like Zaza Pachulia or something. I think that those guys add depth for them. They aren't key pieces, and that's great.
Milwaukee Bucks, 43.5, 41-41 a year ago, but really cratered. I think they only won 10 games after something in that range, after they picked up Michael Carter Williams. He's on the team now. They're going to get Jabari back. He apparently is full go, but reports have indicated he's going to be kind of limited minutes-wise, at least the beginning part of the year. You know, they got Greg Monroe, obviously, an excellent signing, big upgrade at center there. But, you know, you worry about this team having enough shooting. I don't know. I think it surprised me maybe a little. I would have thought they might be slightly higher, but I guess, you know, people are thinking they're the sixth seed in the East. 43.5 is about right. I'm going to go under for them, though, because I just think offensively this team is going to be less than the sum of its parts and doesn't have the kind of veteran know-how that Miami does to get past the lack of spacing.
I wish this line were lower, but I still would go over on it because I think that they're better. They're obviously the end of last year was troublesome, but they didn't have Jabari Parker, and they'll have him hopefully for most of this year. I wouldn't count him much in the beginning. And Greg Monroe is a substantial upgrade in a way that actually matters. I don't worry that he's going to kill them defensively or anything like that. I think their defense is going to be very good.
I don't know. The Monroe-Jabari front court, I mean, granted, they have real good guys on the wing, but when your power forward and your center, I think, are both solidly below average for their positions, it's hard to say that this team can maintain it. Maybe they can. Maybe Sean Sweeney and Jason Kidd are just, you know, Svengali's, and that wing defense and all the switching and the hyperactivity can get them there. But I can't pencil them in for the same kind of defensive performance they had last year.
I think we're going to see less of Monroe and Barker together and more of John Henson with both of them, and also more of Giannis at the four.
Oh, now you're going Henson and Monroe together? I think that's just a disaster offensively.
Especially. Oh, I think they're going to be a disaster offensively. I think that their defense is going to be good enough to prop them up. I don't think their offense is going to be good. I think that any optimism on that, especially considering I am not the biggest fan of Michael Carter-Williams, I don't think either of us is going to be there, but this is a team that knows what they are and that will happily win 84 to 80, 81 games. You know, like, they will win those games, and I think that they can do that, and they will have some potential to go off on some nights. You know, if Jabari goes for 20, I think we're also going to see Giannis at the four. Chris Middleton played very well last year. I think that offensively having him slide down a little bit in role will help him a lot too, because he can do that from a different place. So I think that, and also they're deeper in a way. Like, their point guard situation is messed up, but they have Grievous Vasquez now, who I think helps them. You know, they're going to have a capable steward all the time. They're never going to have a great one, but they'll be capable. And I like their bench for the most part. I mean, I don't love any of it, but they have guys. They have guys. We talked about this with the Heat. I think that they have contributors all over the floor. I trust the rotation, and I think they have a very good coach.
Yeah, and coaching staff. I mean, I can see how it all comes together for this team. I just don't believe it that it's going to happen. I mean, this is a team that was, you know, pretty close to the bottom offensively last year. They had the 24th ranked offense last year at 100.5 points per possession. Or, geez, why did I butcher that? Offensive rating of 100.5 for the Bucks per NBA.com. So I think that they're not going to be that much better than that this year. Their bench, like guys like Jared Dudley is gone. O.J. Mayo was way over his head last year. Jared Bayless was way over his head. They had this dominant bench unit that was winning them games until they made the Carter Williams trade. I don't think that's going to last either. So I will go under, and I feel decently about that. All right, who's next?
The Knicks.
31.5, right?
31.5. They won 17 last year.
What do you got?
Under. Their backcourt is so bad right now. I think we talk about it with other teams sometimes, and while they added a lot of NBA talent, they were adding NBA talent from functionally zero.
That's right, yeah. I mean, you can say they added NBA talent, but they have maybe two above average players on this team right now. Carmelo, and he's probably going to be playing a lot of small forward just due to the roster construction, and Robin Lopez. I don't think there's anyone else you can look at who is even an average starter at their position. Aflalo kind of looks like he would be. Looks like he'd be a good defender, but advanced metrics have long belied that, and he really shot terribly last year, and I don't think he's going to be able to repeat some of his Orlando years offensively at this point. So, yeah, I think this team is not going to really be able to score. And then who's a good defensive player on this team either, even when you look at that end of the floor? You know, Lopez maybe. Langston Galloway, is that their next best defender who's going to be getting a lot of
Porzingis at power forward. And, yes, I'm joking.
Yeah, no, that's that. I mean, the talk is that he might have the inside track to start at power forward. I think he's going to be a disaster trying to close out on shooters. I mean, this is a team that just defensively is not going to be able to guard the 3-point line, and then offensively doesn't really have a great way to get and take get and make 3-pointers either. So yeah, I feel pretty decently about the under. And then also there's the issue that Carmelo is probably not going to be the same. He's 31, coming off a very substantial knee injury that was basically took about 6 months to rehab, and he wasn't the same player last year either. You know, I don't see him getting to the basket a lot, especially in this system where things are kind of clogged up. So, yeah, the more I think about it, I think I feel pretty decently about the under. The only thing against that, though, is they don't have their pick.
Yeah, if I'm about to say something that might get me banned from LaGuardia, but if Melo,
that's a horror.
If Melo,
they're redoing it now with no subway line. Still.
If Melo misses time, are they that much better than the Sixers?
Oh no, they're probably worse.
Yeah, and so
I mean maybe Lopez is the only one.
Lopez, Aflalo is competent at guard, which the Sixers have some issues in their backcourt. Some issues is probably the understatement of the podcast, but the Knicks. We talked about, and what frustrates me about their roster is that they didn't build it around kind of a cohesive idea. Like, they didn't take Melo at power forward and be like, okay, you know, let's get shooters around him. We've complained about this with the Kings. And they got a bunch of guys that I like that play center. And so you can't play them together. You know, even if Porzingis does well, he shouldn't play with Robin Lopez. He shouldn't play with Kyle O'Quinn. Their roster just... It screams to me this will be a year where they struggle to figure things out.
Yeah, they basically have no power forwards on the roster. Maybe Derek Williams.
Are we counting Lou Amundsen? Because we shouldn't.
Yeah. No, he's a center, too. And I think Porzingis even is best at center. Although, you know, he'd probably get killed strength-wise, but at least he's only giving up twos instead of threes that way. Yeah, all right. So both under there. What's next?
The Orlando Magic at 32.5, which would be an 8-win improvement over last year.
What do you think?
I want to be optimistic about the Magic. I like a lot of their guys, but I think it's going to take more than a year to turn this around. What I think has gotten kind of lost in the optimism about them is that this was a team that was bottom six in offense and defense last year. And yeah, while I think Scott Skiles will help them a lot defensively, because this is a team that should be better than they are on that end, and they're getting older and they're getting smarter, and that will help them a lot. But their offense is going to have real not-smiles times this year. And I think that it will be hard for them to get to that level when they're not going to score.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that. Payton just can't shoot at all. Oladipo getting a little better as a shooter, but never a guy who's you're going to be sprinting at to close out of the three-point line. You know, not a volume guy. I imagine it's going to be Gordon starting at the three. You know, he showed off a better stroke in summer league, but I'll believe it over the full course of an NBA season when I see it. You know, I mean, and he's still really young. He's got plenty of time, but I don't know if it's going to happen this year, going from basically, you know, zero to competent from the three-point line. It usually doesn't happen over the course of a year. Tobias Harris even hasn't really shown the ability to shoot threes outside of the corner, although if he plays at the four, then, you know, maybe there's just a little bit more spacing. And then Vucevic, you know, for his post-ups, I think he's going to be facing a lot of congestion inside. So, yeah, I think it's going to be – this is still almost certainly a bottom 10 offense. Maybe Skiles can get them to a better level, but you've still got Harris and Vucevic playing big minutes in the front court there, so you can only project that so far. Yeah, I feel pretty decent about the under. I'm not sure how this team – is supposed to be 8 wins better. And then you've got, you know, someone like Hezonja who might be fun, but I think is going to be a very solidly bad player this year, and he'll get some entitlement minutes. You know, I think Evan Fournier, who could be effective, is probably going to be marginalized a little bit more, and he's never really stopped anybody either. So, yeah, they've got a long way to go, probably longer than you think of when you look at all this young talent on the roster. It doesn't fit together that well. I'm in with the under.
They also don't have players, maybe Oladipo gets there, that can really take over games. You know, the type of, like, I'm bringing this up again with Damian Lillard, like the guy who, if he gets hot, you know, they can win a game that they weren't necessarily playing that well. I don't think they have that. And if a guy like Vucevic misses time with injuries, as much as he is a flawed player and his defense will be an issue, his backup is Jason Smith?
Yeah.
Is it Deadman? I mean,
it's probably Fry.
Fry, I mean, well, that's even...
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that then Oladipo, you know, they have guys that I like, but they don't have players who can scale up in minutes. And even that, they don't have guys behind them who can slide into the backup role. So I would love to be more optimistic. I like some of the guys on this team, though I don't love most of them as many as most people do. I'm pretty comfortable with the under here.
Yeah, and Peyton has some really entertaining skills. And he, Oladipo, and Gordon have the ability to get good defensively very quickly, but you still have those problems on the back end. And I think the degree, despite the fact that he's a skilled player in some respects, the degree to which Peyton's complete inability to shoot chokes off the offense is kind of underrated, much in the same way that Michael Carter Williams is in Milwaukee. All right, who's next?
The Philadelphia 76ers, 21.5.
Yeah. What'd they win last year? 16? 17? 17. 18.
Gangbusters, man.
That was based... They basically had one of the worst offenses in NBA history last year, but somehow had the 12th-ranked defense. I expect that to be worse this year with Nick Stauskas getting some time, with Okafor getting some time. I think Okafor this year will be a disaster defensively. I think he has the physical potential to get it someday, but it's hard to imagine that. And they're going to be throwing it to him every time offensively too. I also don't think Okafor is going to be able to be efficient with his free throw shooting. And also just he's going to need to learn to really work his way into position for deeper shots against guys who are actually his physical equal that he's never particularly faced before. So I expect him to shoot a lot, show some potential, but also be incredibly inefficient this year. So I'm going to tentatively, and of course they also have the incentive to kind of tank it down the end of the year. They could certainly suffer from some injury concerns. I don't think Robert Covington or Azeta Kanan are going to shoot quite as well as they did last year. I mean, they can't be as bad offensively as they were last year, but overall, I think you might also say they can't be as good defensively as they were last year. So I'll go under, but I don't think it's going to be way under.
I think this is a really good number. I was kind of hoping they were going to get 20, and then I could just kind of push it a little bit. But I think that it's also possible, but unlikely, that you could have the worst record in the league at 22 wins or more, just because the bottom got a little bit better, but somebody's going to fall off. And they're the worst team in the league on paper. And they're the worst team in the league on paper by more than they were last year. So I think realistically, you know, something around 20 is most likely for them. I think they'll probably be better on the aggregate. Mostly, as you said, I think their offense was so horrible that I think that's unsustainable. But they're still not, they don't have a full complement of NBA players yet. You know, there's still a team that has roster filler and things like that, especially in the backcourt. And as we know in this league, guard play can help kind of keep a team afloat, and that won't do it. That'll be an anchor for them. So I'm under with them. I would be thrilled for them to go over, but I don't see it.
I'll disagree with you. I think they were clearly the worst team in the league last year going into the year. I mean, they had basically...
Oh, right. That's what I said that too.
Oh, you're saying it was more... I think they're more the worst team in the league this year than they were last year.
Right, because I think that the teams around them got better.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think last year they had essentially one guy who could even look like he was going to be a decent NBA player, and that was Noel. And he was even, you know, a total health question mark, and we had no idea how good he was going to be as a rookie. Now at least they have some guys who have shown something in the league. So I would disagree with you there. But, yeah, I think under, but this wouldn't be – I don't feel strongly about it either way.
Next up, the Toronto Raptors. We only have two left, 45.5.
Whew. Another one of these teams, right, where a lot of things have changed. They were really bad last year defensively. And while they did lose Amir Johnson, he didn't play that well last year. I think Carroll is going to help. I think that Corey Joseph is going to help. Getting rid of Grievous Vasquez and Lou Williams is going to really help, because they might have had the worst perimeter defense in the league last year when those two guys were on the floor. So I think they'll be a little bit better defensively. I think Jonas will make some improvements defensively as well. Biombo will provide like a real like monster shot blocking element for them as well. But then again, Lowry probably won't play as well either. DeRozan, though, had a really bad year. He could probably bounce back. I'll go over a little bit. I think today maybe they get to like 47.
Yeah, this was the one in the East that gave me the most trouble, because I see a lot of reasons to be down on them. I think that...
What are those reasons? I was kind of pretty optimistic there, but what's the downside?
What are they doing at power forward? I mean, this is even... You can talk about how, you know, Amir Johnson didn't play that well, but Luis Scola is not the answer. You know, this is...
Yeah, well, Patterson is a decent player. They'll probably play Damari there at the four. Him playing small ball four was underutilized.
But then it's not like their perimeter depth is so good that they can do that without, you know, like, it's not like they have this other guy. Terrence Ross is fine. He's not, you know, you're not blocking anybody. You're not unlocking some potential by Damari Carroll playing there. And if Lowry falls off, as much as there are things about Corey Joseph's game that I like, I don't trust him to run this offense, whether Lowry is hurt or less effective. So I certainly can see them doing similarly well to what they did last year, but they also didn't miss that much due to injury. I mean, DeRozan missed 20 games, Lowry missed a little over 10, but Valanciunas stayed healthy, and Damari Carroll had the year of his career last year, and this is a different system, this is a different coaching staff, and if he regresses even a little bit, I think that it becomes harder for them to win games, especially when the middle of the East, like let's say, well, even anybody other than Cleveland, there are a lot of good teams there that I think will give them trouble, because this isn't a team that really has a stopper on the perimeter. If Valanciunas doesn't bring it defensively, they don't really have a defensive identity. I could see them just being in that blah area, more like where the Bucks were last year, as opposed to where the Wizards and the Raptors were last year.
Yeah, and I think they will probably have a worse offense this year than they did a year ago, but I think the defense will be better. The perimeter defense actually looks semi-decent now. And I think Biombo will provide a nice element with their bench units. They could actually have a pretty nice defensive unit off the bench. We haven't talked about this at all. The Anthony Bennett buyout, he ended up going to Toronto because nobody wanted to claim on waivers since he had that fourth-year option for $7.3 million that had to be picked up next year. This option had to be picked up by November 2nd. Nobody wanted to do that. He's now in Toronto for the minimum over-under 11.5 minutes per game for Anthony Bennett.
Are we talking for the D-League team or for the NBA team? Okay, one thing I want to say about that. I'm shocked he didn't get a player option second year.
Yeah, right? Like, and now he plays well and they just let him go. There's no upside, but then again, they're getting him for the pure minimum, and that's all that they could offer.
Well, I understand why the Raptors did it. I don't understand why he didn't ask for the player option. They could have just, why the heck not? And it's not like they're subsidizing his contract because he's so young in the league. He's at the minimum where you don't subsidize it. So adding the second year, it's not like for Andrea Bargnani where that cost the Nets a lot of money. It wouldn't have cost them anything for Bennett to say that unless he was so horrible that he was a suck at the minimum next year. And I think you're willing to take that risk. For me, it's an issue with his agent, not with the Raptors.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to cry too hard over a missed player option for the minimum. I'm sure he thinks that he's taking a discount. He probably had higher offers elsewhere, I would imagine, maybe a little bit. And he's already getting paid, so he can just go into free agency next year and it'll be fine. So I can't imagine any situation in which he can't at least get a minimum contract next year, unless he gets really hurt or something. So I don't know. I'm not going to cry about that. But so what's your answer? You over or under?
Under.
Okay, we differ on that one. I don't think you're crazy though. Washington is the last one. What's their number?
45.5.
I like the over on this one.
So do
I think that John Wall and Brad Beal are going to get better. And I really like that they're going to emphasize playing with more space this year. Granted, they may not quite have the personnel to do that, but there have been reports already that their secondary break, they're going to have the four-man running to the three-point line. Even if it's Drew Gooden, and it can be Jared Dudley later. Alan Anderson is also someone who I think is really going to help this team, although he's coming off an underpublicized ankle surgery, so we'll see what kind of shape he's in to start the year. But with all of that, I think that this is just a solid team. I don't think that for the regular season they're going to be missing Pierce that much, and I think this is the year that John Wall is really going to take another regular season leap into being, a clear top five point guard in everyone's minds, even though he probably was already there for me.
I agree with all of that. Also mentioned that Bradley Beal missed 19 games last year, and I think he was limited for another stretch that he played, and we can expect him to do more. Also, I think that they added some pretty solid bench pieces. I like Alan Anderson. I like just the way that it's kind of set up now. I mean, if they can get anything from Chris Humphreys, even though he's not a perfect fit for what they're doing, I wish they had brought back Serafin just to get an extra big, but I think that they are in the right place, and I talked before about, having the talent to take over games. I think Wall is going to be at the point where he can do that, and Dudley, when he gets back, will be a useful piece for them. I like Gortat. I just like their team. And if Whitman is going to finally incorporate some things that he should have incorporated 3 years ago, that makes them a lot more dangerous in terms of winning games that they should win as opposed to losing them like they did the last 3 years.
And they always have a good defense. There's no reason to think that that's going to decline very much this year. So we're both over on that. Give me your best title bet. I guess we haven't even been talking about these numbers. We keep forgetting. But give me your best title bet here among the Eastern Conference teams, and then also your best long shot among the Eastern Conference teams.
Best title bet for me is Cleveland, and that's just because I don't trust any.
2-1.
2-1. I just don't trust any other teams in this conference to win the title. If it was, NBA Finals odds or something like that, I would consider it. best long shot. Wait, what are you classifying as long shot? Do basically
anything Heat. Over 10-1.
So
but
then,
I guess that's everyone, right?
Then the yeah. Heat for me. I think that, but you can think about it in return for your dollars. Like, I think the Bulls might have a better chance, but the difference from 12-1 to 40-1 for me is more than enough to say the Heat are the play there.
Yeah, I would say both my best bet and my best long shot would be the Heat at 40-1. Cleveland at 2-1. Even if you assume for dead bang certain that they're going to get into the finals, which, you know, that's never 100%. LeBron could get injured. You never know what could happen. I mean, Love could go down. Kyrie could go down. I mean, they still struggled with a Bulls team that I think is not, and then, you know, they kind of got lucky with those Atlanta injuries as well. They weren't playing as well. I think that they'll have a harder road this year because it basically can't be any easier for them. So even if you give them, you know, something astronomically high, like an 85% chance of making the finals, they're a less than 50% chance of winning the finals to me against whoever comes out of the West.
That, yeah, I can certainly see that. I think that they have a, you know, their odds of just getting there. And I, like, if you're thinking about a team like Miami, what do you think their odds are if they get there? You know, 10%? Less than that?
No, because if they got there, that meant that they're playing better than you thought. I mean, they'd probably, it's hard to say that any team in the finals has less than like a 15-20% chance if they've actually gotten there, unless like the conference around them was just decimated. But yeah, I think it would be Miami for me, just because I don't think that those Cleveland odds are really.
Yeah, that is a very aggressive number for them.
Yeah. You know, if it were 3-1, I might feel a little bit better about it, but any team with LeBron on it is always going to get a ton of action. So I guess that's the reason that number is where it is. All right. Is that about it for
us? Do you want to do the single, our single favorite over under bet in the Eastern Conference?
Charlotte for me.
Yeah. If Charlotte for me, I'll also give an honorable mention to the Knicks under, because I just think that number is way too high. Like, 31's a lot of wins for this team.
Yeah. When you really start to think about it, the Knicks do seem pretty high, because you're like, oh, they got Carmelo, they got Lopez, you know, and Lopez, you know, he's never really played more. I don't think he's ever even played 30 minutes a game in his career. If he has, it's been like 1 year and not much above it. So.
And their guard rotation is what it sounds like when Dubs cry.
Yeah. I mean, Calderon hasn't been healthy in like 3 years. So, and they have really no one else who passes for a point guard other than him. It's really, yeah, I think it could get real ugly. And even Aflalo is someone who you think of, oh, yeah, they got a decent shooting guard, but nah, I don't think he really is. So, yeah, with all that, I would say that the Knicks would probably be up there as my second best. But we'll wait until the end of the next podcast to really go through and pick our best five. But I can guarantee you Charlotte's going to be in there to be sure. I got to see where we're at with the West. All right. So that'll do it for today's podcast. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back probably tomorrow with those West over-unders and our best bets. In the meantime, follow me on Twitter, NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. You can go onto my Facebook page, facebook.com/NateDuncanNBA. Find all of my recent writing and all the recent podcasts as well. Danny also has a Facebook page that you can find from mine, because I follow him, which you would be mad at me if I didn't. And that's it. We will talk to you all next time. Oh, don't forget about the cap space code on SeatGeek as well. Let's leave that ringing in your ears. Till next time.